This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. So thus far on the show, we've heard about journalists who fled Russia because of a series of draconian anti-press laws that could have landed them behind bars for years. Now we turn to the exodus of refugees from Ukraine, which is being described as the fastest growing displacement of people in Europe since the Second World War. Our correspondent, Micah Loewinger, has the story of the flight from war in an age of micro-celebrity.
What's the news?
I don't know. No one will tell me nothing.
We're watching a live stream on Twitch.tv of a gamer who goes by Bobby. It's February 24th, and he's talking with his viewers.
Thank you guys for being with me for so long.
Most of the screen is taken up by a video game, a first-person shooter. In the bottom right corner, we see Bobby's face. His weary eyes are peeking through a black balaclava. Behind him is a cot, a stack of wood logs, a furnace, and a concrete wall.
Yeah, that's bad news.
Bobby is live streaming from a bunker 30 feet below a military base in eastern Ukraine.
So it looks like a definite war, boys.
His viewers are sharing updates in real time as the invasion starts to unfold.
I've gone back and watched the whole video.
This is Charlotte Wallens. She goes by Lottie. She lives in Trenton, Ontario, and she's one of Bobby's most devoted fans.
He felt the earth move. And you see him sort of pick his head up and look around, and he goes, guys, I think I need to go.
It's at this moment he realizes that Russia has begun bombing his location.
I hope I'll be able to see you again. I'll just drive to my family, and I'll see if I can keep you updated, at least in text or in Discord, guys.
Yeah, you got Discord, Bob. You're good.
Discord is a messaging app popular among gamers.
Watching him say goodbye to everybody absolutely broke me. He doesn't know if he's going to make it to see his kids, much less get to see the rest of the people he considers his family.
I love you guys. Thank you for whatever you've done.
Hey, Bob.
I love you guys.
Wish you good luck, brother.
Thanks, brother. To all of you, thank you very much.
We'll see you soon, Bob.
That's when the stream ends. I saw this clip as it was circulating on the internet and went to Twitch to see if Bobby had signed back on. He'd been silent for 8 days. I wanted to know what had happened to him, whether he'd made it to his family, if they were all right. I managed to track him down with Lottie's help.
So, Lottie, did you share with Micah my location and stuff?
No, not your specific location.
Okay.
Before I tell you what happened, I need to get you up to speed. First off, his real name's Pavel, but everyone calls him Bobby, so that's what I call him. He's from Poland, and he asked that I smudge some of his personal details to protect his family's safety. He originally came to Ukraine to start a business 10 years ago, but in 2014, life in eastern Ukraine, where they were living, started to get really rough. Putin's invasion of Crimea accompanied a parallel conflict in the Donbas region between Ukraine and pro-Russian separatists, about 75 miles from Bobby's home. The nearby violence and economic turmoil hurt his business, and it filled him with dread. To get his mind off of things, he started sinking his free time into a game called Escape from Tarkov.
Beat the ammo. No, PMC, guys, be careful, PMC.
You're dead?
I'm dead, PMC.
It's a first-person shooter game, kind of like Call of Duty, but way more hardcore.
Call of Duty, all of your teammates are marked as your teammates, and all of your enemies are marked as your enemies, and you have a special map that shows you where all your enemies are. Tarkov has none of that and very little instruction to start with. So it's got a very steep learning curve to it.
Bobby became obsessed with Escape from Tarkov for a couple reasons. First, he loved the brutal challenge. You can't just run and gun in Tarkov. You have to be tactical and deliberate. The point is to survive. The weapons are designed to sound and feel like the real thing. And if you let your guard down for a moment, you're dead.
Those who play Tarkov are those who are able to find peace with suffering, and it takes a lot of suffering to get good enough to enjoy the game.
And the second reason?
What clicked with me, because buildings are looking like I'm used to seeing this Eastern Europe in real life, and the story was matching place I was living.
Tarkov is a fictional Russian war zone created by Battle State Games, a beloved Russian developer.
Tarkov was very similar to what was the beginning of the war in Ukraine.
For instance, in the game, you can play as one of two private military groups, which, he says, matched the dynamic in the early days of the war in Donbass.
There were private armies formed by oligarchs in Ukraine.
I get that he really liked the game, but was he good at it?
Yeah, 18,000 hours.
Holy crap. 18,000 hours is 2 years.
I was playing almost 20 hours a day, every day. I was like a zombie, using Tarkov as the only drug to keep me out from having any contact with reality.
When I think of an escape, I think of going to some fantasy land that's so unlike real life that it gets your mind off of it. But this sounds like you were just escaping into a computerized, gamified version of the world directly around you.
In real life, majority of things are usually taken away from your hands, if you like it or not. In Tarkov, majority of your outcome depends on you.
He felt that lack of real-world agency when COVID hit Ukraine. His business, all his investments he'd spent 8 years building, vanished overnight. He remembers telling his Tarkov friends about it in early 2020.
I asked them, guys, I'm bankrupt. I have family, wife, two daughters, and I don't know what to do, how to live. And the best thing I have left under my name is my life insurance. How I can commit suicide? They told me, don't panic. Why don't you just do what you do right now, but for living? And then they asked me straight, why don't you just stream Tarkov?
So he set up an account on Twitch. His wife used a connection she had in the army to help him rent a cheap bunker on a military base 18 miles from his home, which would allow him to stream without bothering his family. He also launched Tarkov Academy, a website where 40 or so people would end up applying to be coached by Bobby. The service was promotional and therefore free, but you'd have to put up with this.
While you are looting the stash, while I'm disconnected next to you, I'll die instantly. Do you understand what means protect me? What the f*** is, do you need to be told such
Dude,
stuff?
Listen.
I told you, protect me.
If you're going to talk down to me like a...
Many people were saying I was taking Tarkov too seriously, but for them it was just a game. For me, it was a source of feeding my family. So every time I died, I'd seen it as taking piece of bread from mouth of my children and wife.
The very first time I saw it, I didn't understand it.
This is Keith Bodner, a 41-year-old operations manager living in the UK. He goes by Keefy.
He's a very intense person when he's in the game, and he's very focused. And because he knows every aspect of the game intricately, I honestly thought this guy's crazy.
Eventually, Keefy and Lottie became two of his biggest fans.
Keefy is Bobby's right-hand man. They have been gaming together and working on the Tarkov Academy program together for years.
Before the invasion, Bobby's stream averaged about 40 viewers. Super tiny by Twitch standards. He made $500 a month through donations and Twitch ads, which was enough for his family to live a humble but stable life. And a big part of the reason this operation even worked was because of volunteers like Lottie and Keefy.
My responsibilities were to make sure that the Discord was running smoothly and then moderating the stream.
How many hours a week would you say you were moderating?
In the region of 50 hours.
Why were you giving this person, I'm assuming you've never met in real life, 50 hours a week of free labor?
It's hard to explain, but basically you fall in love with Bob. You spend a little bit of time with him and everybody says the same. He's infectious.
Bobby takes everybody in who's kind and genuine, and he makes them a part of his family. Calls them brother and he calls me sister. And that makes a very loyal following.
Which brings us back to February 24th, just before 6 a.m. Ukraine time.
I love you guys. Thank you for whatever you've done.
Wish you good luck, brother.
He ends the stream, rushes out of the military base. The air raid sirens are blaring, and he begins his drive back to his family.
About 35 minutes after he left the bunker, he saw a missile go over his head that we're pretty sure destroyed his bunker. We know it hit it.
He starts dictating his will into his phone, which he sends to Keefy in a series of audio messages.
There's missiles literally going over his head. He's feeling them landing. He explained what he believed was PTSD at that stage due to the vibration and impact that it was having on his body.
How did you respond to that?
I had to be brutal to him to calm him down. I couldn't reach across the phone and slap him across the face. I told him to pull himself together, that he's got kids that need him and he needs to think on his feet and he needs a plan to get there. He was like, I know, Keithy, I needed you to tell me. And then as soon as he snapped out of that, his training kicked in.
His training?
He spent 18,000 hours playing effectively the most realistic Russian military simulator.
Over the next 4 days or so, Bobby traveled over 900 miles as he navigated his way towards Ukraine's western border. To survive, he says he drew on 3 lessons that he learned from playing Escape from Tarkov. Lesson 1, think, don't run.
You want to run anywhere. You don't think, where are you running? You're just trying to run away. And as you understand, your direction of your movement is determining will you be alive or not.
When he played Tarkov, he was always the party leader, the one who called the shots.
Every army in the world, they have a drill sergeant.
He says he barked orders at his family to keep everyone from panicking during the overwhelming stress of shelling around them.
I was literally shouting at them to get upset with me, to get to orientate their fear and their anger towards me. To what I'm saying. So bring this, bring that.
A quick note. Bobby has 2 partners, one Polish, one Ukrainian, each his mother to 1 daughter. He calls them his wives, but these are not legal marriages. The backstory is complicated, but based on what I've heard, it sounds like this is a sustainable arrangement between 3 consenting adults. Anyway, they pack up quickly, and the 5 of them hop in Bobby's busted-up hatchback, and they start their escape from Ukraine.
Keefe, your situation is drastic.
Throughout his journey, he sends Keefe and Lottie messages like this on WhatsApp.
Everything ahead of us looks like after Fallout. No people, no civilization, no petrol and gas station, no food, nothing, nothing left. Everyone who was running ahead of us took everything yesterday. I was told that we can only travel till dusk. After dusk, it's better for us to stay in a forest than move on the road. The first night was terrifying because we were in the middle of nowhere and the missiles started falling around us. We didn't know what to do. And we see, I think, 3 families running to some shelter. So we decided to just literally pull over, run with them and hide in the basement.
Bobby looks at Discord on his phone and he sees that Keefe, Lottie, and some of his viewers are checking in on him.
We spent some time explaining, like, look, it's okay. You're not alone. You're never going to be alone. We will be with you every step of the way. And we will watch over you guys over the internet while you're sleeping.
I actually felt alive. I don't feel I'll die lonely because I'm surrounded with people who I spent so many years and so many hours speaking together.
And all of us were sending our love and our support back to them all, even the families we don't know. And he told us that night that it kept them going through the night without panicking.
Lesson 2, listen for clues. The next morning, February 25th, they wake up to shelling at around 4:30 a.m.
From Tarkov, I learned how to calculate the speed velocity of a gun and bullets which are shooting at me by estimating the sound of the bullet. And in real life, it's around 350 meters a second.
Even though there aren't shells or missiles in Tarkov, he applied this technique to figuring out where an explosion was coming from.
I was able to actually estimate the distance to explosion by seeing it and counting the time to hearing it. I was able to understand that this explosion is 1.82 seconds away from me. It's 700-ish meters.
He realized that the time between explosions seemed to be getting shorter.
I told to my family we were leaving and everyone was shouting, where are you going? They're bombing. I said the shelling is around 1.5 kilometer away from us and it's coming towards us, so we will go opposite direction. I think the people in the basement, they were thinking we are mental, but we were actually right.
Lesson 3, put yourself in your enemy's shoes.
I was always trying to explain.
He would tell his students, imagine you are your enemy, hunting you right now. How would you do it?
Where would you position yourself? How would you kill yourself? Where would you expect to expose yourself?
The Ukrainian Interior Minister had advised that civilians turn off cellular data so that Russians couldn't track their locations. This meant he couldn't see where he was driving for much of the trip, but Keefe and Lottie could because they were tracking his live location with end-to-end encryption on WhatsApp.
So we created a map for him on Google Maps and sent it to him as a screenshot and with the instructions page that you can print from Google Maps as a PDF so that he could pull it up on his phone but turn off his data and everything else to try and make them as invisible as possible.
Because I had their information, turn here left, turn here right, they were able to guide me through the countryside, which I'd never been before.
Bobby's hyper-awareness might have even saved their lives later that night when they were looking for somewhere to sleep.
They found a hotel that was on the road between Kyiv and Rivne.
Meanwhile, Lottie and Keefe, who were scanning Twitter and news sites, learned that trouble was approaching.
15 minutes after he got there, we had seen reports that there were troops moving along the road between Kyiv and Rivne. And he goes, okay, I'm going to go out and unplug the battery in my car because the car alarm is going off.
Because even the vibrations from distant shelling were enough to set off the car's blinkers and alarm.
Which in the middle of the night is visible by tens of kilometers.
And about 15 minutes after he went out to go pull the leads off the battery to disconnect the car alarm, the Russian convoy went by. The soldiers didn't enter the building. They just kept moving past them.
While they were focused on the immediate dangers of their journey, Bobby had no clue that he had become famous on the internet. That emotional clip of him saying goodbye during his last live stream had been spreading like crazy on Reddit and Twitch.
I was told that this was actually become so viral it was in the Singapore television, in Spain, in England, in TV.
More than $1,000 of donations had shown up in his bank account. Hundreds of new fans were pouring into his Discord server and showering him with support.
They were calling me a hero, they were calling me a big man, and I'm a god. And I was always saying, no guys, I'm not. I'm just a runner who's running away from his life, and I'm doing nothing special.
This bit of new internet fame, he realized, meant he'd make more money from live streaming when they finally reached Poland, whenever that might be. When I interviewed Lottie last week, she described what she had gleaned about the state of the refugee crisis.
The vast majority of the Ukrainian refugees are fleeing through Poland. It is a 5 to 7 day wait right now in a car. And so keeping two children that young in a car for a week is completely not an option.
Lottie and Keefe started searching Google Maps, looking for places where the family might be able to safely wait out the logjam.
Small, out of the way, close to the border, sub 5,000 people, with like a road that runs straight through it, one way in and one way out.
When Bobby and his family arrived at their suggested village on February 28th, they went into a grocery store.
There was a queue for bread because it's shortage, of course. And we spent 2 hours with 30 babushka, which is 30 old grandmas, in the queue, being so welcome, so helpful, so thoughtful.
This little town mostly just had kids and their grandparents, because the combat-aged adults seemed to be off fighting the Russians.
For me, it was heartbreaking of seeing the grandma when I see how much money she's having in her wallet. You can see her counting in her fingers, will she have enough to buy a bread?
At that moment, the grandma gets a call from her daughter, who is out there at war, asking if she's okay, if the kids are okay.
And her grandma, with absolute peace and smile, laughing, yes, everything is fine, we have money and stuff. And as soon as he hangs off, she openly says to other grandmas that her pension didn't arrive yet because the postman is not walking, so she actually is struggling. And this was the instance when I said, I'm done running. I said, my wife, honey, let's use this momentum of what we have. Let's stay here and help those who are really forgotten in this whole conflict. Because if I run to Poland, I'll watch the news from Ukraine, I'll hear your mom or your grandma, who is blind, suffering, going through it on her own without us, I'll feel like a coward. I will not be able to watch myself into a mirror.
Bobby says both of his partners have agreed to stay in this village for the foreseeable future. They have a plan to escape if things get bad, but for now, they're doing humanitarian work with the money they're raising from Bobby's growing fame.
So there's just these little tiny little villages all over Western Ukraine. And because they're small and they're not being hit by shells necessarily, they're not seeing any of the humanitarian aid that's coming in from the West. So all these billions of dollars that our countries have donated is going to the people in the major cities.
With Keefe and Lottie's help, Bobby set up gamersforukraine.com. That's four, like the number four. He sent me a picture of packed grocery carts he says are for families passing through. He told me he's already driven countless people to bus stops and train stations, and that they've also begun renovating a building which will serve as a free hostel for refugees.
But for the last few days, when we're actually actively helping families to run to safety, it changed my life forever. Because the mental and moral reward for help with no interest cannot be replaced by any other action or activity in life. And I love it because I feel that I've done something which will be left over from my existence in this earth.
When this is all over, if it's all over, do you think you would go back to playing Tarkov 20 hours a day?
Yes, of course. I'm sure of no doubts. I didn't play Tarkov for 10 days right now, and I miss it. I wish to be there.
At night, his family often stays in a bunker while Bobby is stationed in a watchtower to make sure Russian troops aren't coming down the main road into the town. If you go to his live stream, twitch.tv/babubi, B-O-B-U-U-B-I, I don't know why it's spelled like that, you can see him sitting in the dark in that tower, his face lit by the screen, chatting with his viewers.
Hello, Fi Fi. Hello, how are you doing, Fi Fi?
Just chatting. He has no way of gaming right now.
How are you doing, brother?
I'm fine, thank you. What about you?
I'm just cold. I'm fine, I'm just cold.
For On the Media, I'm Michael Owinger.
And that's the show. On the Media is produced by Eloise Blondio, Rebecca Clark Callender, and Max Balton, with help from Aki Camargo. Xander Ellen writes our newsletter. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Andrew Dunn, Adrian Lilly, and Andrew Nerviano. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.